Welcome to the One Last Sketch Podcast, a show about science fiction, fantasy, and history, and today it's going to be about cartoons. Hey, I'm your host, Michael. These are my guests.
Marie.
And Corey.
Really, you're our guest, though.
Yes, I am their guest, because I'm at their house! We don't live in the same part of the country.
At all.
In case you were wondering.
Like, we're literally almost as far away as you can get from each other.
And still stay in the same country.
Yes, big country.
This also accounts for why it's been such a giant gap between this and episode 30, because it seems it's just better to record when everybody's in the same place instead of trying to schedule Skype over three-hour time differences.
I mean, it works, but it leaves stuff to be desired, you know. But anyway.
Which is why we just went, let's just do a random salad dressing of a podcast and talk about all the cartoons we've been watching over the past 1 or 2 years.
Yeah.
Give or take a bit.
Cartoons.
Most of this is going to be anime, because Japan makes a lot of cartoons.
Yeah.
We could talk about other things, but there's nothing non-anime on the itinerary, is there?
Well, we're not going to talk about Avatar because Michael hasn't actually seen it yet.
I could throw in some Rick and Morty references, but I don't think you guys have watched that
yet. No, so yeah. No.
And we already talked about Ruby.
Yeah, because I haven't watched the new season, so. Basically, we're bad at doing homework.
But we are good at really liking Kill la Kill.
Yeah.
It's because it's an awesome show.
Probably the best anime ever. I'm just going to say that.
It's pretty up there.
It's
a show about high fashion and matricide, and you're all going to love it.
It's great. If you've watched any anime, you will find some part of some trope that is brilliantly recreated, turned up to 11 in the show, because there's no moment of the show that slows down ever.
Well, the whole gist of Kill la Kill, I mean, it's essentially a parody of all anime conventions, but instead of being a parody in the sense of it's constantly poking fun at these conventions and saying how stupid they are, it's the parody in the kind of vein of Hot Fuzz, where it very much loves what it's parodying, so it just embraces the conventions and cranks up the insanity with them.
So what is Kill la Kill about?
It's a pun.
It starts off as one thing and becomes something very different.
As many anime shows do.
Yeah, yeah.
But when we start out, it is about Ryuko Matoi, the angriest girl to ever enter high school.
Yeah, or to exist potentially.
And that's saying something.
I mean, there's not angry girls are, I think, probably a thing in anime, but I feel like
there is a term
not
for
this
it.
Kind, though. But, this is very much your shonen angry revenge hero.
But it's a girl.
But it's a girl.
Which is great, because she's just so angry. It's so believably angry. But even when she's still, she's always angry, she thinks that everyone else is crazy. It's the best part of this, and then she doesn't understand why.
So this very, very angry girl with a scissor blade comes to Hinoji Academy, which is Sparta,
mm-hmm.
essentially.
Yep.
This is the indeterminate future
mm-hmm.
where mankind has discovered the properties of life fibers, which go into clothing and can give you powers if they're sewn into things called Goku uniforms for this
mm-hmm.
particular academy. And the student council is absurdly powerful. Because they have control of the Goku uniforms at this school.
Not a whole lot of education happens at this school.
Yeah, it's one of those cases where the student council of the school somehow controls much of the local government. Like Yeah, again, it makes no sense if you really take the time to think about it. But again, the show is a parody on some levels. So.
Like Mad Max, though, everything is really on point in terms of being coherent within itself. Like, it's just perfect in this universe.
Yes.
There is a weird internal logic to it. Yeah, it shouldn't work, but it does.
So Ryuko has come to Hinoji Academy, specifically transferred in, because she believes the president of the student council, Lady Satsuki Kiryuin, has some inkling about why her father died.
Yes. And, well, yeah, she does. But anyway.
Okay. As much as I like Ryuko Matoy as a character, the leader of the student council is my favorite thing in the show.
Seki Kiryuin! Yeah. There's a lot of
she wears a Hillary Clinton-style pantsuit.
True. And there's a lot of click stomp as heel to toes of slightly heeled shoes come down. I'm pretty sure that one clip is used at least once an episode.
Oh, probably.
Of various people.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, but our introduction to this character is basically her screaming at the school that they're all just pigs in human clothing. I know the phrase pigs in human clothing is part of it, but yeah.
The truth is lies.
Attention! Your student council president, Satsuki Kiryuin! Hail!
Fear is freedom! Subjugation is liberation! Contradiction is truth! Those are the facts of this world! And you will all surrender to them! You pigs in human clothing!
It gets very Orwellian.
Yeah. But it's also just absurdist.
Another great line, ask not the sparrow how the eagle soars!
Oh yeah, that's one of the best lines.
I just randomly text that to Michael every once in a while to amuse myself.
You've done that once, Corey.
Yeah. Alright.
These are the truths of our world. Pigs in human clothing!
And you shall abide by them, you pigs in human clothing! The dub is amazing.
The voice actors are so good. Like, seriously, so good. It's probably, I want to say it's because it's a more recent anime and people are slightly getting...
Also, I think that the voice actors were just really into the show.
Yeah.
Well, it's so hard not to be like, again, it's just, it's so absurdist as to be hilarious, so you can't help but get into it.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, she shows up, there's a bunch of fighting, but she gets a suit of her own that is 100%?
Yes, 100% life fibers. Yeah. Most people would die if they put it on, but for some reason, which is revealed by the end of the show, Ryuko Matoy can do it, while Satsuki can also wear it through the sheer force of her will.
Yes!
Isn't it also... What's the suit's name again? Because it's a character.
Senketsu.
Senketsu and Jinketsu, I think.
Thank you. Senketsu is also intelligent, so when Lady Satsuki wears him later, it's because he agrees to, because there's bad stuff happening.
Yeah.
Spoilers! Jeez!
Yeah.
Sorry. Insert spoiler notice here. Insert spoiler alert here.
If they couldn't guess from the beginning of us just plain old demarking the plot, I mean...
Well, we haven't revealed anything beyond the beginning of the show.
Yeah.
Except that we really like these characters.
And what I think that one of the best parody things in the show is the attire. Because the show is about fashion. It's about fashion and death, because I understand that the words to cut and to murder or something are pretty much the same word in Japanese. They're homophones in Japanese. So it's kind of a pun. That way. But it's basically also the sluttiest of fashion choices, which is the best part of this, is that as they morph into their...
Combat forms,
basically it's all the skin all the time.
Because the human body cannot handle too much contact with life fibers.
Yes, otherwise it would just die. So you see a lot of... You don't see nipple because it's like clamped to the nipples. It's pretty... Pretty incredible.
A big part of the early parts of the show is Ryuko being really embarrassed about having to wear this stupid uniform, and it does look ridiculous.
It does.
Satsuki, the minute she transforms into her, she just rocks that thing, no problem.
And then because of the purity of her nature, you know, it's fine.
The show is, I mean, again, the show is a parody, so it's very self-aware. So one of the ways that self-awareness comes out is by Ryoko being embarrassed by how revealing the clothing is, despite the fact that incredibly revealing clothing is basically a staple of a lot of anime at this point.
But as Sankets later points out, that once they sort of come to terms, she comes to terms with this, he's like, not only now am I being worn by you, but you are wearing me! And this is just like anything in anime where stupid phrases are meant to be meaningful.
If you're squeamish about seeing nudity, this isn't the show for you, because by the end, everyone's naked.
What's funny?
Yes, literally.
Literally naked.
What's funny is there are literally whole episodes where characters are running around naked, but the way it's drawn, you never actually see anything. Yeah. Now, I don't know if that was censorship for the dubbed version or if that was literally just the studio's choice, but it's kind of funny for a show with as much nudity how little is actually revealed.
You do see a lot of dudes' butts.
There's a lot of dudes' butts.
Yeah, those are like not even taboo.
You don't see penis, and you don't actually see nipple at any time. Yeah. And you don't see any,
you don't
like,
see the cooch.
And you don't see it. I was going to say cunt. You don't see any lady parts.
You actually see a ton of nipple, but they're all on men. So that's, in quotes, okay,
yeah,
apparently.
That's been okay.
Yeah, because men don't have boobs.
Yeah, boobs. You see lots of boob, though. Like,
yes,
oh,
you see lots of
boob. Whole lot of boob. Boob,
so
is it?
I know that this could be a barrier to entry for people, and there was this apparently giant argument on the various social media platforms when this came out about how acceptable this was. The way the characters are drawn, they're so stylized that I can't actually connect them with human people.
Yeah.
So
they definitely don't look like, how are they supposed to be? Like 16?
Yeah.
They're teenagers, yeah, so about 16, 17.
They don't really, they look slightly older than that, I'd say, and they look a little, yeah, I mean, it's pretty stylized.
Well, I mean, one thing.
All the animation is really exaggerated.
The hair, though, the hair is really well animated.
One thing I think that kind of gets lost in translation for a lot of people as well, especially where a lot of this kind of weird, hyper-sexualized aspect of anime is concerned, is, I found this out a while ago, the age of consent is much lower in Japan.
Look, this doesn't matter, Corey.
No, I think it does, though. I think it's worth adding to the conversation in that, yes, it's kind of creepy from a North American perspective. Because,
like a lot of things from Japan.
Like a lot of things from Japan. But again, you don't have to agree with what's happening. You just have to realize it is coming from a different culture with different norms. So that's where a lot of this arises from.
And it's batshit crazy. It's great.
It is batshit crazy.
It's also poking fun at the sexualization of teenagers very much.
Yeah.
The whole point being,
because it's not sexy anymore. The level that Kill la Kill takes it to, it's absolutely not sexy.
You're busy wondering how is she possibly comfortable fighting when she's got this thing riding up her rear end. Like,
that's actually the big thing. One of the big things about the show is it's not a sexy show at all. For a show with as much nudity or implied nudity as it has, there's...
It's revealing, but definitely not sexualized.
Yeah. I'd say it's actually totally sexualized.
Yeah,
but it doesn't care, because that's what it's making fun of.
Well, that's the thing. It's sexualized as a way of poking fun at sexualization. It's not, when I said it's not sexy, like, it's not designed to be arousing or...
It's not attractive, yeah. It's not attractive.
It doesn't have that sense of eroticism that a lot of shows with similar drawing and art styles have. It's very much, okay, this is ridiculous, is
well,
the attitude.
Because the angles and the shot choices are the same that you would use in a typical shonen fighting show.
Yeah.
They just happen to be wearing ridiculous costumes.
I know. Corey was pretty uncomfortable with the sort of zoom into the crotch moments of transformation.
That's
after
about sexy.
After about, after
it's
about
like snap.
After about the fifth of those, you realize that it's just a crazy thing you're doing.
Yeah, it's just crazy.
But it is a really silly show, but I'm not going to say it's a meaningless show.
Yeah. There are a lot of, you know, good character arc, growths, meaningfulness of friendship, etc.
Well, it embraces a lot of common anime themes, like friendship, like you said, evolution of characters, like getting quote-unquote stronger and learning new abilities and gaining new powers. But while it is poking fun at all these tropes, like we said, it embraces them fully, so it actually makes them work. It's one of those parodies where it's a typical example of what it's mocking, and that's part of its charm.
Mm-hmm.
And the science fiction concept behind it isn't terrible.
Yeah, I mean, the way it's sort of rendered and drawing it in the last couple of episodes of how these...
Life fibers are aliens.
Yeah, life fiber-based antagonists are really just sort of leisure suits in the sky is kind of weird looking. But...
So basically, there's these life forms called life fibers, which land on planets... speed up the evolution of a local species to get it to intelligence and to get it to the point of wearing clothing so that they can in turn have themselves stitched into the clothing of said life forms and use this as a way to consume them as a fuel source. So it's, literally, clothes are sentient aliens that are trying to eat people.
I also feel like it's sort of making fun of how things are quite convoluted in a lot of anime things. Because this is the most convoluted
way
eat humanity and the planet ever. It's like, why don't they just cut the planet from the beginning? It doesn't make any sense.
Well, I mean, another part of it, or one of the tropes it's making fun of, is that whole crazy otherworldly power invading, right? Like, I mean, it's ridiculous that it's clothing, but in some ways, it's no more ridiculous than, say, aliens or... You know, giant robots or any of the other things you see in these kind of shows.
It's just... manages to justify itself because it goes, what other species on Earth wears clothing?
Yeah, exactly.
The internal logic of the show is surprisingly good.
And this weird commentary on fashion and how serious we take it sometimes.
Yeah, that's true. Also, I like that the evil corporation of fashionness is called Revox, which is, I think, one of the best puns. Of the whole show.
Please explain the pun, Marie.
It's like Reebok.
Yep.
That's it.
Well, that was an anticlimax.
Everyone does wear Reebok. That's kind of the joke.
Part of the kind of messing with the tropes aspect of it, too. Like, I mentioned how the clothing is intelligent and it just happens to be the invader. Through convoluted story means that I'm not going to get into here, Ryoko, I don't know why I can't pronounce her name. Ryoko is half life fiber herself, so it's the case where she's a human being, but she's also part clothing.
Because, you know, half Saiyans are the more powerful. So
pretty much, yeah. And she literally goes Super Saiyan at one point, so...
Yeah, it's pretty... Yep, that happens, and you're like, hey!
The problem with the character progression here is that, like lots of shonen shows, she just randomly evolves an ability that lets her do the victory, and it's making fun of that, mm-hmm. and it's pretty cool when it happens, but it's not really earned.
Well, it's also kind of making fun of the shonen trope where the hero is also part or from or all or whatever it is they're fighting against, right? So it's like they're part of the evil empire, but they're raised on the good side, so they learn how to be good, so they resist their evil empire-ness by using its own forces against it, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is Dragon Ball Z in some ways.
Yeah. It is many anime in many ways.
If you've seen an anime, you've seen sort of part of Kill la Kill. But Kill la Kill is better. Is the key
Yes, thing. And if you've seen Gurren Lagann, you've in part seen Kill la Kill. Because it's the same people.
And again, though, for all the parody in it, for all of the fun it's poking at these silly tropes, it embraces them fully. So, like I said earlier, while making fun of these things, it's also probably one of the best examples of them.
Its great strength is its characters. The writing of the characters is fantastic.
They're really likable. Even Ryuko, who's super angry, is really quite a likable person.
Satsuki, even at the beginning when she's painted as this terrible dictator villain, is... She's like Lady Eboshi in Princess Mononoke.
Mm-hmm.
You just can't help but like her for how she sticks to her principles and how determined she is to achieve her goals.
And like Lady Eboshi, she ends up actually being a good guy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Spoiler. Yep.
No, we issued the spoiler warning. They're good.
That's true.
As the first outing for a studio, because this is the first show that Studio Trigger ever made, it's a... pretty giant splash in the water.
I'm pretty sure because I don't know where it was. I read it. One of the guys who worked at Trigger was said that, like, you know, he'd be at Trigger and then he'd go back to some other studio and work there. But he'd go back to Trigger and everything's noisy and chaotic in the creative process there. Like, they're just kind of like, I don't know, friendlier, just having a good time more. And he'd be like, these guys are crazy. They're not getting anything done.
I believe it, considering their other output.
It was because you very much get the sense from watching the show that the people behind it are quite expressive and crazy and a lot of fun.
You get the sense that they love anime.
Oh, yeah.
They love it. Also, the obvious joke of it takes place in a high school.
And which is nothing like high school.
And that they're wearing sailor suits, which is nothing like sailor suits.
I usually can't stand shows that are set in high school, but Hinoji Academy is so not...
Yeah.
You get like one or two scenes where they're in a classroom and crazy crap is happening in the background all the time. None of the high school drama ever happens.
Glowing nipples. We should probably talk about that.
Yes, they exist. Also, glowing testicles. And...
Yeah.
Right. That was how they got around showing things. Is they just instead of actively censoring stuff, they just had it glow.
Apparently, David Bowie became a teacher, and then whenever he would slip out of his teacher disguise into himself, his clothes would start to magically peel off. His nipples would glow as would.
And what was great about that was Ryuko's reaction, which is like, "What are you doing?"
She's like, "Stop putting your clothes on! This is wrong. What's wrong with you?"
So one thing I wanted to get into before we finish talking about this was that initially when the show was written, all the characters were male, all the main characters.
Mm.
And then they decided this is too much like Gurren Lagann, which plot-wise it's, and progression-wise it's a lot like Gurren Lagann. Let's make all the characters female. And I feel like it's not just a cosmetic difference when you're watching this show.
I'd agree
with that. Like, I think having female characters just gave it a much different feel as a show.
The characters are much better in Kill la Kill than Gurren Lagann.
Plus, you couldn't do the sexy clothes jokes nearly as well with the male.
They do them with the teacher,
they do them, and they do them with like some of the like the males still have Goku uniforms that transform, but Gamma Gori
has a bondage uniform.
I know. But it's just, it's not quite on the nose as it is with female bodies, because females are way more often sexualized.
Yeah, and also with the theme of clothing and fashion.
Yeah, yeah.
You take that theme, it works a lot better if all your main characters are women. And it also has the bonus that this is a show where the women drive everything and are the most important part of it, which is not the case with most anime. Like 99% of anime, there might be a young girl as the main character, but she'll be the only person who does anything through the course of the show.
99% of what we get here, at least.
Yeah.
So anyway, Kill la Kill. 5 out of 5. 10 turkeys.
It is a hilarious show. It's a ton of fun. You actually care about the characters. Like I would agree with Maurice.
Lady Sasuke is my favorite character in most of everything.
She's basically but your favorite person, I think.
Yeah.
Like, and I mean, she merits the feelings you feel for her, because she's definitely someone that you don't want to cross,
Yeah.
I would also probably bow down to Lady Satsuki if I went to Hinoji Academy. She fucking shines like a star. The shining thing was also really good.
And her hair just blows so aesthetically in the wind.
I know! And yet somehow magically covers every part of her when it's required. Yep. Very good.
So, for Mood Whiplash, the next show we're going to talk about is Neon Genesis Evangelion, which...
No one else.
Kill la Kill, I probably should say. Unlike Evangelion, you can watch Kill la Kill either on Crunchyroll if you're in the States or on Viewster if you're in Canada. Evangelion, though, is long being tied up in weird legal disputes.
Yeah, so you kind of have to watch it another way.
By other means or through eBay purchases of old DVD sets.
It was hard to track down. I'd been wanting to watch it for a few years, and we finally got to it a few months ago.
So, Neon Genesis.
Neon
Genesis.
If it makes anyone feel any better, I thought it was neon as in lighting and didn't realize that the whole phrase was actually just Greek.
Yeah. Neon Genesis Evangelion is a very important piece of the history of anime because it changed just about every show that came after it.
And it was what, early 90s? 92?
Yeah, somewhere.
Mid, I think?
Yeah. 92, 95. Somewhere
somewhere between
92. Every studio after this tried to make another Evangelion.
So things got depressing.
Yeah.
Well,
so it's a giant robot show.
It is in its own way a parody, because there had already been lots of Gundam shows at this point. And it was getting a little stale, that genre.
It has a directed by Hideaki Anno. It's working for Studio Gainax, back when Studio Gainax meant that everything they made was good.
Mm-hmm.
This is a robot show that posits, how would real teenagers react if we made them kill aliens with giant robots?
Poorly.
Very poorly.
It's one of those shows where, when you hear it described, it sounds cliche, but you have to keep in mind, it kind of started a lot of the cliches.
Mm-hmm.
Like, all of the characters are damaged. Just about everybody has got some form of mental illness, or traumatic past, or something.
Not that there's anything wrong with having a mental illness.
No, not that there is, but just something that makes them a broken person. Something that makes it difficult for them to fit into and interact with the world in a normal way. And then when you kind of multiply that by all the other crazy trauma fighting aliens, it just gets bizarre.
Now, a lot of the internet conversation about Neon Genesis Evangelion made me not want to watch it, because it concentrated on aspects of the show that don't really matter.
But I'd only heard the like opening credits, which makes you not really understand what's about to happen.
But that is a great song.
It's a great song! Really, not really of the tone of the show.
No. So this show owes a lot to Freud. We'll get
this
that
show,
out.
Oh my god, if you do psychiatry and you know anything about Melanie Klein's and object relations theory, this show is amazing.
It's kind of amazing to begin with. Like, I mean, there's a lot of psychoanalysis and a lot of, like I mentioned, mental illness. So there's questions about mental illness in relation to the world, in relation to other people. There's also a lot of religious symbolism, specifically Judeo-Christian.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's what lots of the internet conversation revolves around, is the use of this imagery and how it plays into the themes of the show.
I'm pretty sure it's just cool.
Yep, the real answer is it doesn't really matter, mm-hmm. but that's what people got really hung up on. Mm-hmm. And the other part of the internet conversation is how much people hated the ending.
Yeah, the ending,
which is amazing.
The ending's really good.
And is a direct result of them running out of budget to do much of anything else.
I have to appreciate Anno's decision to, when people were like, he states in one interview that I read somewhere, so I'm sure it's totally legit, that his studio was like, why should we keep going if we can't create a quality project? And he said, well, let's just reflect our own demise in the show, which they did. And it actually works really well when we get into this reduction psychoanalytic last two episodes, which initially I had quite mixed feelings about, but now that I've reflected upon it, actually really quite like.
Well, it's one of those second halves of the show that completely transforms
mm-hmm.
the first half in retrospect.
Mm-hmm.
It fundamentally changes how you view all the characters and events that happened beforehand, but we haven't even talked about what this show really...
Yeah.
Well, is there much of a plot to this beyond Shinji Ikari is the main character? He has to use the Eva, which is the giant organic robot thing that you can pilot by entering a lot of womb fluid. And he has to fight these giant beings that they label angels and name after biblical angels, but they're aliens. We'll just leave it at that.
Name them in the show.
They're really not aliens, but they are for the sake of the show. Yeah, it's just... It's an
extraterrestrial threat.
It's literally just teenagers piloting giant robots to fight alien invaders. That's where the show starts. And it takes a very familiar premise, and then from there, it complicates it by adding in basically everything we've talked about. The Freudianism, the religious symbolism, the damaged characters, like, it just... It takes
bad people doing things for ultimately good reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And good people being manipulated into doing bad things for questionable reasons. I think that's part of it as well.
Who are the good people in this show?
I think Shinji starts out good.
I think he's an asshole. What are you talking about? That's the whole character part of him.
No, his character arc is he goes from being kind of a shy, unassuming, but otherwise normal teenager to being a shy, unassuming jackass of a teenager.
Yeah.
So in that regard, he really doesn't change much.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of this is focused on those three Eva pilots.
Yes.
So, Shinji, Asuka, and Rei.
Rei was very popular, which is very funny and really problematic because she's a terrible person. She's not even really a person.
Well, you can't really call her a terrible person. She doesn't know how to be a person, really. So we have these three teenage characters who don't put teenagers into combat situations is one of the main themes here.
Yeah, unless you want to hear people scream and cry a lot.
So then this focus on these three teenagers and Masato, who's in her 20s.
I think she's older than that. Early 30s.
Yeah. I think if I'd seen this as a teenager, I probably would have identified way more with Shinji and the rest of that crew. But watching it at this point in my life, she was the one.
Keeping in mind, this was probably originally done targeting teenagers as an audience.
Yeah, and then the second half of the show happens.
Yeah, and in which they say, screw you, there's going to be a lot more meaning than you can handle.
Yeah, and you have Shinji, who's the quote-unquote chosen one, but really bad at it.
Yeah.
And then you have Asuka, who's everything Shinji should be, but because she is, that ends up just destroying her by the end of the show. She's just a complete mess later on. I think one of the most powerful moments was seeing the transformation of her character from being such a confident,
self-assured
fighter to just
not
becoming a wreck.
Well, I mean, she has a complete mental collapse, basically. Like, my understanding is that the director suffers from a lot of mental health problems.
He was having depression while directing this, you can tell.
So the show is very much kind of depression-fueling art. It's his way of kind of venting and getting out and sharing what it feels like to have this horrible illness by reflecting it in what he creates.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, in that regard, I would argue it's very successful. Like,
And it's also what people didn't want from the show, which is why they're so angry about that second half.
It's unfortunate, too, because it does such beautiful, amazing things, and yet everyone's like, oh, well, this isn't just giant robots fighting aliens. But if you kept it as giant robots fighting aliens till the end, it wouldn't have been a classic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean,
there's also movies.
Yeah.
I haven't seen End of Evangelion, which... it was marketed as this is what the show would have been and how the show would have ended if we had the budget to do it and didn't run out of budget halfway through. But it's not really that.
I actually really like the End of Evangelion because it's, again, it's a movie. It basically retcons the ending and replaces it. It effectively replaces it by doing the same thing, just in a more action-oriented way. What I like about it is it lets you actually see kind of how things lead up to the conclusion. It lets you see the events surrounding it, and it gives you a different angle and a different insight on what actually happens. Like, I know we've kind of had debates over which should be considered the real ending, and I don't think it's that one is better or one is the real ending over the other. I think it's just two halves of the... I think the two of them kind of provide two halves of the complete ending, and it's just giving you that different perspective.
Unfortunately, we're going to get another ending soon because Anno went and made a bunch of movies that retell the Evangelion story, and there's still a fourth one that's supposed to come out, which completes it. So,
when I had originally seen Evangelion, I thought that I had wanted to see more in the ending instead of the last two episodes. I was initially quite frustrated. Because the last two episodes are very much like a psychoanalysis, where you get asked the same question over and over again until insight is achieved. And it's kind of a little, not boring, but kind of frustrating to watch.
Also reused animation.
Yeah. Well, that was the budget stuff.
Yep.
But when I saw the actual ending for End of Evangelion, I actually really didn't like it. And I mean, it did sort of tell you some things that were happening, but I think that knowing those things doesn't really improve the experience of the show, necessarily. And I've read in some other things that if Neon Genesis was coming from a place of depression, End of Evangelion was coming from a place of anger, and you can kind of tell it. in the show, where everything just sort of gets shat upon in a worst way. And then instead of the optimism of the original insight of the original ending, you get actually kind of a depressing regression right at the end that is unsettling and unsatisfying, I find.
Which is funny, because I found the opposite. Like, I didn't find the new ending to be depressing, I just found it to be different.
Yeah, I know.
Or conversely, I actually found the original ending to have maybe a hint of depression in it, where it seems happy, but it also seems kind of happy in a sinister way, where it could be viewed as having just a small undercurrent of darkness to it.
I think it was sinister because we didn't know what had happened.
Maybe.
In a way, having watched the end of Evangelion, you kind of know what's happened around it. I think probably watching it from the, because it goes entirely to Shinji's perspective in that in those sort of final moments, I think that's probably more interesting. Because you already knew key things like that, Masato die. Like, you knew that because mm-hmm. you saw it in an image mm-hmm. right at the end. Yeah. And other stuff. Sorry, Michael. You didn't know that, did you?
Nope.
Well, you may have missed that, but it is actually shown to you.
Apparently in the new version, she's like a spaceship captain by the last movie, so...
Oh, who knows what's going to happen. I feel like the real ending of Evangelion has not actually ever been shown, and I have a feeling that it may not be capable of being shown.
Well, it's kind of those weird things, which is, what is a real ending? It's a lot like The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Which version is the real version? Not the Hollywood movie, but...
Don't read Mostly Harmless if you want to be happy.
But we're not talking about The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. We are talking about giant robots. Mm-hmm. Which means what we're going to talk about next also involves giant robots. Mm. Because it's called Escaflowne, which is popular in Canada and Australia.
Yeah.
For whatever reason. Well, the reason for Canada is because they showed it on YTV, and unlike the Fox Network in the States, they didn't let a few episodes run and they go, what did we buy?
Yeah. I actually don't remember ever seeing the show at all. I think I remember seeing, like, next up, Neon Genesis Evan, or sorry, no, The Vision of Escaflowne, and then being like, oh, I don't know what that is, and I'm not watching it, and going to bed or something. But I think you watched it, Corey, when you were your
kid. Yeah, I watched it when it was on YTV as a kid, and then I bought it on DVD as an adult.
And that's then you how got you, rid of it.
You originally saw it as an adult.
I did see it as an adult, yeah.
But did you see his DVD
version? Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Large. So you just got rid of it after. Now she's mad at you.
I see. Yes. No, I got rid of it because then I can't watch it. But anyway, it's weird. And I think what's funny about it is it's not nearly...
That's an understatement.
It's not nearly as weird as Neon Genesis. Neon Genesis, is, I think, is a lot stranger. And it's not bizarre the way that Kill la Kill is in the sort of turned up to 11 way. It's a little more, I want to say, quite subtle. And I think one of the issues that North American watchers had was that, at least specifically with the Fox original, they thought that Vaughn was the lead, but it's actually not a shonen show at all.
Well, it was trying to capture both male and female audiences in Japan. They did it the most obvious way. Mm-hmm. They go, we'll combine giant robots with high school girls looking for romance, and they'll be dragons, because girls like dragons.
Yeah.
And we'll have princesses and cat people.
And fighting. And a war.
Yes. Yeah. And Isaac Newton, because
why not? Yeah. That, incidentally, that's also spoilers. I don't know if you figured out by now or not, but we're actually just going to tell you everything that happens in everything now.
Yeah, the villain in Escaflowne is ultimately Isaac Newton, which is hilarious. Mm-hmm. I don't know, I found...
And you don't see coming until near the end.
No. I remember liking Escaflowne a lot as a kid, and I remember even enjoying it in my early 20s, but I remember it's also one of those shows I think, or I find, you guys might disagree, but I find it's very much, it caters to its audience. Like, it's very much meant to be a show for kind of junior high school age kids, kind of having those first experiences with falling in love and developing crushes and strong emotions and all that other kind of nightmare stuff we all had to go through. And I found it was kind of a show I outgrew.
Mm-hmm. It's really melodramatic.
That might be part of the reason why.
In a way that Neon Genesis isn't. And in a way that Kill la Kill isn't. Because I don't think melodrama really describes either of those.
Well, Neon Genesis isn't melodramatic. It's just dark, basically. Yeah. And Kill la Kill is a parody, so any melodrama is serving another purpose than melodrama for its own sake.
Maybe not even melodrama for Kill la Kill, but like hyper...
Yeah,
hyper.
Have you done cocaine? Is what's Kill la Kill.
Yeah, basically, some anime they take some drugs and make them. Kill la Kill, they took all the drugs and then made a show.
We got some talk about Kill la Kill, there was some talk about Escaflowne. I think I agree with Corey, actually. Escaflowne is something that you're kind of like, yeah. Maybe if I was a kid, that's how I'd do that.
Well, I remember finding it.
Adult characters that you can latch onto in Escaflowne, but they're never the focus of the show. And it's mostly on Hitomi, who's a teenage girl from Japan. And the
and her name is Destiny. Oh my god, I think that's what Hitomi means.
It's also not an uncommon name in Japan. She also uses tarot cards, because she's mystical and stuff, which is why she gets to this other world. What's the name of the prince again?
Vaughn?
Prince Vaughn, yes.
Well, King Vaughn.
Later.
Yeah.
He's only a prince for like two episodes.
Yeah.
So it's focused on Hitomi and Vaughn and the cat girl and their adventures.
Yeah.
But I was really impressed with the world building in the show. Mm-hmm. It does a very good job of... She goes to an alternate world that's not Earth, and it does a great job of... This is a culture that has developed. It has a history entirely independent.
Mm-hmm.
Of Earth.
Mm-hmm.
So everything doesn't follow the paths you might expect it to.
Mm-hmm.
And the set design, I say set design, the background animation, I should say. The background paintings and the architecture and the little details are really well thought out and entertaining to see. And I think as an adult, that's what you end up really getting into.
And I mean, there's dragons.
And there's dragons. And there's giant robots who are powered by heart crystals ripped out of the hearts of dragons. It very much has that. It's technology marries magical sources to create things.
Basically, they needed a way to have a robot.
Yeah.
That's what they did.
But the explanation is pretty cool. Yeah. Also, Prince Dalandau has... The English voice actor for that in the original YTV release was having way too much fun. And every time that character's on screen, I just can't help but have this giant goofy smile on his face, because he is emoting with such
Really, he belongs in Kill la Kill.
If I'm remembering correctly, Dalandau is kind of like your cliche evil for its own sake character.
Yeah,
but it just kind of works.
That voice actor just... It's like he's in an entirely different show. He just gives his 100%. I think the voice actor was like 14 at the time or something.
He's pretty great.
Also, he's a lady.
Yeah, it's this weird thing where this character...
He's a lady.
It's this weird thing where the character is...
Talking about the lady.
If I could actually finish a thought. It's this weird thing
where... The lady's mine.
It's this weird thing where the character is male... But they're actually a woman. And I don't mean, like, it's not like it's a transgendered thing where it's somebody in a female body who thinks they're male. Like, there's one part Delando rips his shirt off, and it is, you know, a male chest, a male physique. But then through magic-y magicness, Delando was a girl as a child, and they somehow transformed him into this male figure.
Because physics.
Yeah, because physics, with a completely different mind. And then when he finally snaps out of it and goes back to his real form, he transforms into a woman again.
That's not really, it's not a transformation you see, it just happens.
Yeah, it's really bizarre. I think the potential, and maybe if the show was made today, they would have picked up on the potential more, because there are some interesting things you could do with that, but it just, I think it was just a way of making it a little weirder.
I think describing the show as having potential is pretty fair.
Which is not to say it's not hugely entertaining, because it totally is.
Too many sympathetic villains, though.
There is a movie... Which apparently has much better animation than the show, but I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah. The ending's kind of like, ugh.
Why would Hitomi go back to Earth?
Like, why?
It doesn't make sense.
Because that's how the show has to end.
Does it? She could have just stayed there.
Oh, I
would have made any difference.
I agree.
She's the freaking High King, where she's got, like, responsibilities and promises.
I agree there are better ways the show could have ended, but it's the nature of the type of genre it is, where it's like, oh, but she has to go back to Earth and always have this unrequited love for her whole life. Like, part of it, there's an element of coming of age in it that you just can't get away from, and part of coming of age... I guess, according to how it's portrayed, is that you need to have those first loves, but you need to realize that that's all they are, and then you need to move on and actually live your life from there.
I remember how excited
you need to watch some Makoto Shinkai movies to start learning about that stuff.
I remember how excited you were for me to watch the show with you, and it's so funny that you just sort of went, eh.
Again, I kind of outgrew it.
Yeah. Like, there you go.
So we've just talked about three shows with teenage protagonists, and that's a theme in anime, because the next thing we're going to talk about also is a teenage protagonist in the high school.
Yep. The girl who left her time.
Sorry, just to pick up on that, I think one thing that gets missed a lot of the time by North American anime audiences, because it's become part of nerd culture, so nerds of all ages watch anime. But in Japan, a lot of these shows aren't made for a general audience. They're targeting teenagers. That's why they're about teenagers.
Yeah. Yep.
But The Girl Who Left Through Time is not just for teenagers. The Girl Who Left Through Time is for everybody. It's Mamoru Hosada's first... It's not his directorial debut, but it's his first film that he made independent of a franchise that wasn't Digimon.
It's a really good movie. I thought it was very beautiful.
It was really, really cute. I'd say the plot is cute. The animation's gorgeous.
Oh, the animation is a big plus for this. Just the character expressions in The Girl Who Leapt Through Time is amazing. Mm-hmm. But going into the plot, The Girl Who Leapt Through Time, that title's not a metaphor.
Yeah, no, she literally jumps frequently with her head.
She gets this power to be able to skip back in time if she jumps high and far enough. And she gets this time travel power, which I mentioned briefly in our last episode back in December about favorite shows. I talked about this one, how I liked it, and how it's about teenagers doing stupid crap when they're given time travel powers. And that's basically what it is.
The 10 hours of karaoke is pretty much on point.
I think one thing we talked about after we watched it, it's a very honest portrayal of what would happen. Because let's be honest, a teenager with that kind of power, they're not going to have these big world-changing events. They're going to try to make their own life a little better, which is what she does. And then that has consequences.
Every character in the show is really well-characterized. They feel like real people acting in very believable ways.
Yep, it's great.
I mean, can we really say more about... There aren't really deep themes or anything to this movie. It's just a fantastically constructed film.
The color palette's nice.
Really well animated. The character designs are incredible.
I think there's, like we mentioned, Vesca Filoni, there's a lot of kind of those typical cliche coming-of-age themes. But they're handled in an interesting way, or at least an enjoyable way. Like, I never felt like they were patronizing. I never felt like they were being hammered into your skull until you were just sick of them. It's just, that is the nature of the story, but it's told in an enjoyable way.
Yeah, it's very much a prime example of its type. And as a fan, I think this is kind of your ultimate family movie.
Yeah, anyone could watch this.
Anyone could watch this and enjoy it. It's not like Evangelion.
Yeah, there's nothing gratuitous in it. Like, there's no sex, there's no violence, there's no...
Mm-hmm. There's some important stuff. Some important things happen.
Like,
it's probably PG.
I mean, there are some significant emotional impacts that the characters suffer, but like nothing that's insurmountable, nothing that's grotesque or gruesome or scarring.
The ending's a little, wait, how are you going to do that? But hey, let's not spoil it too much, because actually it's pretty easy to just go watch a movie. So.
Yep.
We should all go watch that.
I believe that's all the cartoons on our list, unless you had something else.
The only thing I have is Berserk.
Which I haven't watched.
Yep. So, speaking of depressing, at least... Neon Genesis Evangelion has, like, a hope or a purpose at the very end of it. In Berserk, everyone dies, and the show ran out of funding.
Part of the problem...
But the manga is still ongoing.
Part of the problem with Berserk is the comics, like Michael said, are still going.
And there's been another season of Berserk recently, just so y'all should know.
But the original run of the cartoon, the original run of the show was only one season, and only covered, like, the opening story arcs of the comic.
Mm-hmm.
And it just so happens that that story arc ends in a very depressing manner. But the reason it does that is to give the kind of catalyst and motivation for the rest of the series to continue. You just don't get that in the show because it didn't go past that first season originally.
Yeah, so from what I understand, you get the low fantasy from that season, and then the comics that Catalyst was, then it became a giant, overpowered high fantasy.
Mm-hmm. Basically, series. Yeah. So this thing that's like this ending that's supposed to be this emotionally significant moment for the main character, that's supposed to propel him onto all these other things, that's supposed to be like the defining point of his life, just becomes this depressing wrap up to like 20 some odd episodes.
Pretty sure when we watched it together, like we saw the first bit and then we see Guts with his like, what does he have? He has like an arrow launching arm.
So he's got a repeating crossbow strapped to his arm. Those are an actual thing that exists. He's got a mechanical arm.
The Chinese invented it.
Yep.
And they invented them so long ago that Jesus could have owned an old one. But he's got like a crazy mechanical arm that's also a cannon, and he's got this impossibly big sword, as one has in anime.
So you see that like the first couple minutes of the first episode, and I remember Corey being like, oh, this might be good, and then you never see that again.
It's because the first episode takes place after the rest of the episodes in the season. But again, you don't really know that without doing background research because it doesn't fill in those gaps because it was supposed to have another season and didn't.
Yeah, it was in media res and didn't.
That's Berserk.
I highly recommend Berserk Abridged, however, which is a really good YouTube series in the abridged genre where people who love shows take the thing, redub some voices, make it better. This one is pretty low budget, pretty early in that, but I think it's funny and works well because the show itself is so depressing that any jokes and levity are helpful.
I don't know if I could honestly recommend watching Berserk. Like,
no, I wouldn't.
Maybe the comics are worth reading. I've never tried, but like, it's just it's an incomplete story, and it's a depressing part of an incomplete story. So there's never any sense of satisfaction or closure, and like all of these things that you think are building to something that should be going somewhere ultimately don't because they
all die.
It's like, okay, all this stuff's happening and demons massacre everyone and the show ends. It's like
Judo, god damn it.
The problem isn't even that it's depressing, it's that it's unfulfilling. Just because, again, there's no follow-up.
Yep.
I don't know if I've mentioned that enough, but
yeah, also a cartoon that we're not going to talk about because Michael hasn't watched it is Avatar the Last Airbender,
which is not anime.
No, but it's a cartoon.
Yeah,
this is technically a podcast about cartoons. We just all watch anime.
It's anime inspired. Oh, no, we don't just watch anime. I watched the latest season of Samurai Jack, which was a lot of fun. And I've watched Rick and Morty, which is a lot of fun. But this is not the time or place to talk about those.
Yeah, because...
Anyway. Blah-blah-blah-blah-blah.
Anyway, we may get to that because we finally convinced Michael to go beyond the first couple episodes of Avatar and finish watching it.
Yeah, I mean, what else are we
going to do? Anyway. What else did we talk about last time? I don't remember what shows we talked about before in these things.
We've only talked about Ruby.
So.
Which also, we can't talk about because Marie hasn't watched season 4. We already talked about the first 3 seasons.
So we technically haven't talked about Dragon Ball Z, but I don't think we need to because everyone's seen that.
It kind of speaks for itself, yeah.
It's old, and it's not really that good. But it's a part of your nostalgic childhood, so you'll watch it anyway.
The best summary of Dragon Ball Z I've ever actually heard is from the epic rap battles of history, Goku versus Superman, where one of the taunts Superman uses is to... I think the exact line is, your raps are weaker than your fight scenes, just one punch and over 9,000 screams.
Yeah.
That sums up Dragon Ball Z perfectly.
Yeah.
So you guys haven't seen Song of the Sea yet, I don't think.
No.
So these were some cartoons we watched and liked over the past year and a half.
6 months. Yeah.
That we watched at some point. That's my cat, Niall.
Mm-hmm. Our cat, Niall. Thank you.
He loves me more.
I know he loves you more, but he's still my cat.
And that wraps up episode 31 of the One Last Sketch podcast. You can download previous episodes on iTunes, Stitchers, and Google Music. You can visit my website, onelastsketch.wordpress.com, where I have articles intermittently. I don't write them that often anymore. You can find Marie at her blog, which suffers the same problem.
Yep, theatropexy.wordpress.com.
And you can find Corey at
fromspeechfire.wordpress.com.
WordPress buddies.
It's free. Again, I don't update it nearly as often as I should, but it does happen occasionally. So.
Man, that's such a Canadian ending to a podcast. We're just apologizing.
If you like this podcast, write us a review on iTunes and tell everyone to listen to it so that we can set up a Patreon and get that sweet, sweet Patreon cash. Because we're not doing this for fun. Bye.
See everyone.
Bye.